This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the scuffling voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew, how are we?
Well, I'm good. I've just been told by you that you had a scuffle in your time away, and I stopped you right there, stopped you in your tracks. I didn't want to hear any more because I want to hear it for the first time right now. Talk to me, Richard, about this scuffle.
Scuffle might be the wrong word. So bearing in mind, in this last week, I spent 50 hours on a plane. 50 hours. I've basically gone to the other side of the earth and back. So I went to, I think we touched on this last week in the pod, but I went to Seattle to watch Mr. Bond against Seattle, and then went to Orlando. Got to catch up with Kevin Hitchcock, actually, which was nice. Haven't seen him for years. Of course, my ex-goalkeeper coach at Watford and Blackburn. So I watched the game. Really good game, actually, Orlando versus New England. But I was quite tired at this point. It was actually after this game, and I'm walking out, and there was a lot of the stewards that are working there, and I was waiting for Thomas Vasilic to say hello after the game, and then I found out where he was, and I just needed to walk across the parking lot, as it's called, of course, over there. So I had to walk across the parking lot onto the path, around the corner, and then I'd meet Thomas. Anyway, as I'm walking, I had one of the stewards shout at me. Bear in mind, this is an empty car park, and I'm walking diagonally across this empty car park to the pavement or the sidewalk, and he screamed at me, "Excuse me, sir, you need to stay on the sidewalk." And I've looked across, and I'm going diagonally to the sidewalk, or I can go to my left. It's going to save me about 6 seconds. So I was like, "Oh, no, I'm just going over there." He's like, "No, it's for your own safety." And I've looked around. There is not a car in sight, you know, and I learned how to cross the road when I'm quite young. I'm like, "I'm just walking there." He goes, "You have to go on the side." So I was like, "Okay, fine." So I've, you know, but then at that point, I think, and again, this is where it's not my finest moment. I'm obviously a little bit tired in this moment. So I've then literally walked to my left, walked across, and I've still got to cross over this like little bit of road to get to where I needed to go. So it took me about an extra 6 seconds, at which point, and I really shouldn't have said it, but I was tired and I was annoyed. I then turned around to him and I said, "Sir, thank you so much. I think you might have just saved my life." And he said, "Are you being cheeky, sir?" I was like, no, genuinely. Like, who knows what could have happened if I'd have walked straight across that diagonal instead of here. He goes, "Don't you be cheeky to me, sir." And I was like, okay. And I left it at that point. I did just walk on. But I was annoyed with myself afterwards. I felt I had to say something. But at the same time, it was ridiculous. I'm going across the car park to the, I'm calling it a sidewalk now, to the pavement. Like, what? Why do I need to go there to go there? Yeah. And I just had to say something.
What a petty man. You are.
I know. Rigidly. I know. I am. Although, I am.
So, I mean, you told me scuffle. I was thinking two blokes locked in some sort of embrace. That was basically an exchange of words.
It was a very light exchange of words, but it was one of them where I did have the moment, though, after that. I thought, do I continue this? Because it is ridiculous. Like, it's so ridiculous. There's not a car in sight. I'm a grown man. I can make my way to that bit, and I'm going to be safe. But where I was happy with myself, I did leave it at that point, and I just walked on and went and met Thomas. But yeah, I was a grumpy man at that point.
Did you tell Thomas the story?
I didn't, actually. No. I mean, it's not a very interesting story. It's only because I mentioned scuffle, and I think I got your hopes up that you've then got me to tell it on this podcast. Otherwise, I probably would have let it die with me.
Good accent, though, mate. Very good. Let's quickly review the goalkeepers that you saw while you were out there.
Yeah, it was good. So I watched the first game, obviously Seattle against, and it was actually Sebastian Frey for Seattle and obviously Jonathan Bond for Galaxy. Both keepers performed well. Seattle were better on the night, and of course Galaxy now haven't made the playoffs. It was interesting watching the Orlando game. Thomas didn't actually play. It was, I forget the guy's surname who played, and he did okay. Wasn't overly tested. New England were poor on the night. They're obviously a team that are expected to do quite well in the playoffs because they've already made the playoffs. It was good to see Galeza. He's the Peru number one, and he's a little bit unconventional. I watched his warm-up, watched him during the game. Unconventional but effective on the whole. He did have a moment for the goal itself, shot from range, didn't get his body behind it. It's kind of squirmed through him and gone into the corner, so probably wasn't his finest night, but you could see that there's some attributes he's got that were very effective. But yeah, quite interesting to watch. Very, very different from what we see in the UK.
Good stuff. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Right, we are going to start in the Premier League and at the Emirates, where there was a potential title clash, as I'm sure they're calling it that early in the season, between Arsenal and Manchester City. A 1-0 win for Arsenal and 300 appearances up for Edison. We'll start on that quickly. The Manchester City goalkeeper, 300 appearances, Richard, 140 clean sheets in that time, which is just ridiculous. And before we get on to David Raya, I just want to touch on Edison's performance again and his distribution, which of course is now taken for granted, but he was exemplary once more, wasn't he?
Exceptional. And do you know what? We talk a lot on this show about where goalkeepers get to a point, possible over-familiarity. It just feels like with Edison, he's almost beyond that now for me. Like, it's just accepted that he is world-class. A lot of what he does is so effortless. When you're watching him sort of, even this, what he makes look so simple, like side foot pass 60 yards into, you know, into the winger, or again, just so calm in everything that he does. But he's got to that point where I don't feel like he gets questioned anymore. You know, I know we're going to talk about David Raya shortly, but with him, it just feels like it is what it is. He's obviously won, you know, he's won the lot. He's so consistent for them, loved by their fans. I think most in the game consider him to be, you know, top three, top four in the world. I think that's fair. And again, I just thought everything that he did just looked so calm, composed, tuned in. Yeah, really accomplished performance.
His wallop at the end, did you see that too? Because that was incredible. Yes, it went all the way through to David Raya and didn't do anything, but that was just one touch, barely any backlift inside his own box, and pretty much cleared the entire length of the pitch.
Yeah, he's got 80 yards, 85 yards it must be. And do you know what, I watched with a little bit of jealousy, because I remember when I played, and honestly, I must have practiced distribution kicking more than anything, and I just never had that kind of raw power. It's, and I'll try and describe it, it's where it's, he's obviously very flexible, you know, and it's that, it does look effortless, like the way that he swings through. I suppose it's the same way in which you swing a golf club. It's not necessarily about brute force. It's about that speed, that club head speed. And it's the same when you watch him strike the ball, he just gets through it so well, so cleanly. And yeah, it must have gone 85 yards, as you say, went to nothing. But that's the great thing about what he has, in that he does have the ability. Of course, he plays out all day and plays out really, really well. But then every now and then, because the other teams know he's got that, it stretches the play and it makes it that much easier for him to be able to play out as well, knowing that he's got that in the bag.
Let's get on to David Raya then. A lot was said during the game about the fact that apparently Raya was a mess. He was all over the place. The occasion had got to him. He was a nervous wreck, I think Gary Neville said. There was a hangover from that midweek defeat to Lens. There was a tweet actually from Carl Henry, previously of Wolves, which I'll quickly read out to you because this got quite a bit of traction on Twitter or X. He said, has Gary Neville got it in for Raya, or is he just doing his best to get Ramsdale back in? When a commentator has an agenda, they influence millions of fans worldwide. It's really poor. Edison hits a diag and he's saying Raya is rocky, whilst Edison is hitting 50-yard diags. Raya hit two better diags and he doesn't say a thing. I'm no Arsenal fan and rate both Ramsdale and Raya highly, but Neville's assassination of Raya is poor and unfair. I hope he realises how damaging to the player it can be and stops. Now, interestingly, Henry received a bit of backlash on that tweet from a lot of people disagreeing with him and saying that Neville was well within his rights to criticise Raya in that first half. Taking Raya's entire performance into account, what do you think?
I agree with a lot of what's said in the tweet, but it's everything that we said over the last few weeks. Because of the situation that has been created, it is still the main talking point for us, you know, and it's still the main talking point for a lot of people. And naturally, when you're playing in that situation and you've got people like Gary Neville that are commenting on that, of course it does, it is of interest. It will sell column inches because there is a big debate, like you say, Raya or Ramsdale. We've been talking about it for a long time. It's still a conversation between fans. There's a lot of fans that really want Ramsdale to play. So it has now created that. Now, do I think there was a hangover? No, not really. Do I think he'd be nervous? Yeah, of course. Like, this is all still very new to him. This is where ordinarily a goalkeeper goes in that role. You'd have the full support of fans, manager, whatever it might be. And it would be very much for you to settle in and then to build to wherever you end up getting to. Whereas you feel with this, because it is such a hot topic, people are looking, or certainly certain commentators might be looking for those reasons to then ignite the debate again. Now, I think on the whole, I think Ray has been very, very good in the games that he's played. Even the goal that happened the other day, we spoke about it. Yeah, it's a pass into midfield that was cut out, and there's a lot that happened thereafter, and it's a brilliant finish. Now, in this game, did he have a couple of moments? Yeah, you know, a couple of moments early on where I thought the one where he actually got closed down, I felt for him a bit in that, you know, it's been passed back to him on the angle. So tough to deal with that, to open up so quickly and look to play, near impossible. So I could sense in the moment he wasn't overly happy with the defender giving him the ball back in that situation, or at least if he's going to do that, lay it onto his left foot so he can clear it down the line. So he gave him a really tough ball to deal with them. There were a couple of others where it's probably a little bit too tight, where he's tried to overplay, but there's also loads of great stuff in there. And I think that's again where it's that objective analysing of a goalkeeper's performance, where you're right, a couple of those balls that he played out to the right winger in particular were phenomenal. You know, we spoke about Edison's boom, he had one himself where he put it over the into the far corner over the fullback's head, again put them in. So I thought on the whole I would have it down as a positive display, but of course if you're going to take the two or three moments in isolation, you can look at those two or three moments and then come up with the conclusion that he looked shaky.
It did seem like maybe that was a directive that Pep had clearly set for Julian Alvarez in particular to shut David Raya down. So I thought that was quite interesting. And actually, you mentioned the one where he was closed down in the first half. I thought it was excellent to see minutes into the second half that the exact same thing happened.
Yep.
And this wasn't mentioned at all, but David Raya kept his cool and, as you say, released that lovely ball over the top to Gabriel Jesus, very much trusting the process, very much not changing his game.
Well, that's it. You know, and I mentioned this before in terms of when I played, and you're well aware as a goalkeeper what the safe option is. And to be honest, those balls that are coming back on the angle, you know, you can just clear it out the line, clear it down the line, or even kick it out of play, and no one's going to remember it. Whereas that one where you do open up and then you look to play, which he did, and as you say, did it very successfully the second time round, that is what the manager wants, because of course you're keeping possession of the football and you're that much more powerful, that much more effective for your team. So he was very much sticking to the game plan, and once or twice it hasn't quite come off, but on the whole it did, and of course Arsenal get the victory. So yeah, look, I think for me on the whole, as I say, I'd have that down as a positive performance, but it's amazing, you know, I have all the Google alerts that come through, the amount of articles that I'm seeing, and they'll get different people saying different things about him. There does seem to be a bit of a narrative again that is forming, and it's a shame, and it's been caused by this situation where you've effectively got two number ones.
Okay, moving on to the Amex, where it was Brighton 2, Liverpool 2. We'll start with Alisson for the opener from Simon Adingra and get on to Bart Verbruggen for the penalty, which put Liverpool 2-1 up. But Alisson also making a fantastic save from Adingra a few minutes after the restart. We saw a few of these, actually, this weekend. A few moments happening moments after the restart. But this one, for me, was a save of the weekend contender from Alisson. I thought this was a brilliant stop.
Yeah, it was a top save. And I think I'm going to talk about the goal first, actually, because I think that I've watched this a few times and it was interesting. Probably a little bit unlike Alisson in that I don't think he necessarily read the situation maybe as quick as he normally would. In that the moment they've lost the ball, his initial move isn't that sharp move to get himself back into position. I don't think he saw the danger. He almost felt that they'd won the ball. They were going to then maybe play it wide and do what they do. Whereas, of course, the lad's seen the opportunity, taken the shot early, and I don't think it registered quite quick enough. So I do think he could have got himself into a slightly better position. And that might have changed the whole phase of play. Because I think had he had done that, I don't think the lad takes on the shot. I think, you know, they probably play a bit and that situation doesn't happen. But, you know, whether there was any potential error in that at all, you know, the way that he always reacts, you know, I think we've mentioned the game that he played against City a few years ago, which was so unlike him, where, you know, we had a couple of moments in succession. Because one of the things you would say about Alisson, and certainly a lot of the top goalkeepers, is that ability just to switch back into their optimum performance state, which, you know, he certainly did. And as you mentioned, thereafter, again, I thought he was faultless.
Verbruggen for the penalty, playing out from the back. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because this is the second time now this has happened for Brighton since Verbruggen has come in. So two of these moments relatively early on in his Brighton career.
Yeah, and I think that, again, we go back to the style of play, and it is, are they going to change? No, you know, it's working on the whole, and certainly I think most agree that Brighton, that they're one of the strongest teams in the Premier League, and they've got such a defined style of play. I will come back to the idea that, you know, they're swapping keepers so regularly, and I know we spoke about this a lot, and actually there's a really interesting example last night where, from what I understand, I think Wigan have done a similar thing at halftime. Sam Tickle's come on to offer them something a little bit different. So I think we're now starting to see this more and more. I know we spoke about it in depth, so I won't go into too much detail, but I still wonder that idea of playing a goalkeeper for a few games and another one for a few games and, you know, and then back and forth in the way that they're seemingly doing at the moment. I do question it just because of, I suppose, situations like this. Like, I know how hard it is to step in when you haven't played for 3 weeks, you know, and Verbruggen has had a couple of these moments. Even with this one, he did actually find his intended pass. Now, it was always going to be very difficult for the defender to deal with, so I don't think he necessarily does it again. But again, that's the instruction. Can you play into that sitting midfielder? Can they release it out to a fullback? And then you're off, and you'll do it 99 times out of 100, and you'll have no issues. But where it is so intricate, there are going to be moments like this. And I think it's unfortunate for him that he's had a couple so early on, because I think actually a lot of the other stuff he's done has been very good.
And just finishing up, the rest of the action in the Premier League. Another save of the weekend contender. This one from Jose Sarr, from Ollie Watkins in the draw between Wolves and Aston Villa. This one also seconds after the restart. A good save from Konza late on as well. And a new long-term deal for Sarr.
Yeah, this was a top, top save. I just thought, you know, in the moment that the ball's been volleyed and it's going into essentially the top corner, the speed of reaction, the power, this is very much the best of Sarr. And we have seen this certainly from time to time. He's very much got this in abundance. You know, you look at how explosive he is from that moment. That ball's nestling in the top of the net, but the speed at which he gets up and the athleticism that he shows to get fingertips, thought this was a top, top save.
Nick Pope, a late save to earn a point for Newcastle at West Ham. A really good save from Jared Bowen, which was actually mirrored somewhat in one of the two big saves from Thomas Kaminski in Luton's defeat at home to Tottenham. Really good saves from Richarlison and Kulusevski in that one.
Yeah, very similar saves, as you mentioned, to the Nick Pope one, where it's that ability to get down at speed. And both of these are tall goalkeepers, of course. Nick Pope, was he 6'5"? I think Thomas Kaminski, I want to say 6'3". And that's important in moments like this, because I think to get down as quickly as they did and get the fingertips round the post, and they're beautiful saves when you make them, when you just get the finest of touches and you see them go the other side of the post. You know, I'd argue as a goalkeeper, it's arguably one of the favourite type of saves that you can make. And I thought, as you mentioned, the timing of the save from Nick Pope, a huge, huge save for them. Unfortunately for Kaminski, you know, excellent performance all in. Wasn't enough in the end to earn a point, but he certainly, seemingly with each game, getting stronger and stronger for Luton.
Thomas Strakosha bagging his Premier League debut for Brentford, but it was, of course, Andre Onana bagging the headlines in the game between Manchester United and Brentford. United scoring two goals in injury time to win it, but the opener scored from Mathias Jensen. Yet again, Onana called out there.
Yeah, a bit of a strange one, this one, because it's come through body, so it's not an easy one to deal with by any stretch, but it's more the fact that he seemingly pushes off the back leg. You know, I think this is one where, had he been able to push off his right leg, he'd have got that little bit more distance and quite possibly got two hands to it, maybe been able to get there that little bit more comfortably. But it made it such a tough save. He was kind of springing off the back leg. He's then tried to get a hand to it, and it was always going to be tough to get enough power on any kind of parry. So, yeah, certainly one again that he'll look at and maybe tweak the technique a little bit. But it does just seem, and again, it'd be interesting to know what his mindset is at the moment, where, you know, we're talking a lot about Rara Ramsdale. Onana seems to be a big topic of conversation at the moment. So, yeah, really curious to know when he's going into games how he is feeling, because he does seem like he is ultra confident in the way that he holds himself. Body language is very, very good, but there have been a few moments now. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see how he does do in the upcoming games.
And finally, a spawny goal of the weekend contender, if not the spawniest goal of the week, scored by Tom Cairney of Fulham, although given as an own goal, unfortunately awarded to Wes Fodderingham. Horrible, slipped, deflected finish from Cairney, which crashed off the crossbar onto Fodderingham's head and into the back of the net. Horrible, spawny.
Unbelievable. I kind of feel like it probably sums up Sheffield United's luck at the moment, where they've had so many late goals go against them. Of course, they then took the hammer in from Newcastle. But you look at all the games they've played, they've been in all the games other than the Newcastle game. And it just brings back memories of when I was at Watford and we were in the Premier League, and you kind of feel like you're in every game. Then all of a sudden you check the league table, you find yourself down the bottom and things just aren't going. You're not getting those little breaks that you need in the Premier League. And I think this kind of summed it up, really, because it was so spawny. Like you say, he's slipped, and even the trajectory of the ball. You know, Wes Fodringham isn't advanced. He's in a really good position, but essentially it's lobbed him. Hit the bar and then come back, hit his head. I mean, even that could have gone anywhere. Comes back, hit his head, goes in the goal. But it's just one of those things. You could do this 100,000 times, and that isn't going to happen again.
It is the EFL overview, starting in the Championship, where after going 7 games without a win and no clean sheets for Middlesbrough and Seni Dieng, it is now 4 wins on the bounce with back-to-back clean sheets in the last 2. Dieng dazzling with a fine stop to prevent Patrick Roberts in what would have been an equally fine solo effort. Nice gloves, by the way, on Dieng. Nice old school gloves, quite like them. More big stops from Carl Rushworth as Swansea beat Plymouth 3-1 at Home Park. Crucial saves at crucial times is what good goalkeepers are all about, and Rushworth is racking them up under Michael Duff, as is Victor Johansson under Matt Taylor at Rotherham. 9 saves in a draw with Southampton. The pick of the bunch from Kamaldeen Sulemana, Adam Armstrong, Shea Adams and Will Smallbone. Very much man of the match there. And Bart Bielkowski. Now, I know I should not make light of this, but I do always chuckle, and I know that you don't like it, but when I see a goalkeeper scampering back to his or her line, you just can't help but laugh a little. It was for the goal that put Hull 2-1 up. His defenders sold him up the Swanee, to be fair, and he's just not managed to get back in time to compose himself.
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with that. I felt for him, really, because it is that moment. Again, it's something that you work on to an extent as a goalkeeper. You obviously work on coming out to close the angle, but it's a very different movement when you've got to turn and sprint back towards your goal. And yeah, certainly it's fair to say he didn't look the most comfortable in that moment. That being said, he did get himself back to a position, and in the end, obviously ball squared and put into the empty net. Not a great deal he could have done. But just to touch on a couple of the other saves that you mentioned there, I thought the save from Dieng was excellent. And as you say, they really seem to be coming into a bit of form now and showing what they showed last season. You know, potentially a little bit of a hangover on the back of last season, but they look like they're very much up and running now. And, you know, he's certainly been a major part of that. The save he made with his foot, excellent. Just very, very powerful. Again, we say this a lot about Dieng, but moves very well, does have that explosive power, and no doubt he'll be a big figure for them this season. And then Johansson save as well, probably similar to what I'd say about Dieng's in terms of the power, the reactions. Again, a very athletic goalkeeper, a goalkeeper that was excellent last season and certainly has started this season very well too.
We should just mention Cam Dawson too, back in for his first league start since the opening day of the campaign. It has been Davies Vazquez since then, but as we normally see, a new manager comes in or a caretaker manager comes in, what's the one thing they do to change things? They change the goalkeeper.
You do see it so often. And in fairness, from what I've seen from Vazquez, he's looked very good. So no doubt he'll feel a little bit hard done by with this decision. But of course, Cam Dawson was so influential last season in them getting promoted. So you kind of felt like it was only a matter of time before he'd get his chance. And as you mentioned, so often when a new manager comes in, that chance is given. And to start with a clean sheet, very good.
Into League One, where it was an eventful day for Bolton's Nathan Baxter. A couple of really good saves against Carlisle and a penalty stop to deny a Joe Garner. However, stranded went up for a late corner, and seeing that horrid moment when the opposition break free and finish up the contest. James Beadle, lauded by boss Liam Manning for the 6 saves made in Oxford's 3-1 triumph for Bristol Rovers. Another MOM display and another win for the ever-impressive Ewes. And Luke Southwood, after 7 defeats on the bounce, Cheltenham have finally bagged a point and they have scored a goal for the first time this season. The point, of course, thanks largely to Southwood, who yet again, as he has been doing all season despite their results, putting in a good show.
Yeah. Firstly, to mention Luke Southwood, because I really felt for him. When you're in a team like that and you're performing well, but you literally cannot score, it can be so demoralising. So credit to him for keeping his level so high. And now you hope for them this could be the turning point for them. And certainly Nathan Baxter, top display, really good penalty save, lovely one-on-one save where he's almost made up the striker's mind, read the situation really, really well. I mean, look, nothing he can do about the equaliser. You know, I like the fact that goalkeepers go up. I've made this clear. You know, whether you lose a game by 1 goal or 2 goals doesn't really make too much of a difference. So I think it's always worth having the extra man in the box. But obviously one of those moments where they did break and it was always going to end up in a goal. And James Beadle, as you mentioned, another man of the match performance. I watched this game, streamed this game, and yeah, I thought he was excellent throughout. Massive double save, and seems to be growing with each game, and certainly Oxford are as well. They look really, really strong this season.
And finally, in League Two, Paul Farman showing strong reflexes to spare James Chester's embarrassment. The Barrow defender almost hammering into his own net to hand Notts County 3 points, but saved by his no-nonsense number one. As were Stockport, yet again, thanks to Ben Hinchliffe. A double save to deny Doncaster's Modu Fall and Joe Ironside a narrow 1-0 win. Jake Turner keeping his consistency in goal for Gillingham. Seven saves in the home win over MK Dons. One in the dying embers from Max Dean, grabbing the headlines. And Christy Pym. So I saw a tweet from goalkeeper coach Adam Collin, who said, "The moments we prepare and work hard for daily." Now, this was alongside a clip of a quite brilliant penalty save from Pym to keep out James Tilley of AFC Wimbledon. It ended goalless, and that was a huge, huge save.
Yeah, it really was. The fact that he stayed still, you know, he's obviously done his research, done his homework, stayed still, but it's still, even then, the reaction, because it's going above his head. It's not like it's straight down his throat and he's able to get a firm parry away. It's going above his head. So the reaction to get a fingertip, and it's that lovely moment when it hits the bar, hits the line, comes back up again, and he's able to collect the ball. Brilliant, brilliant save. And a few other good performances you mentioned there as well. Jake Turner certainly, you know, really established himself as a number one there, and a couple of massive moments. Quite a tough day for Gillingham, of course, with Neil Harris moving on. So having to do it with, I think, Keith Millen's stepped in for now, but never easy for players that when you've got that sort of turmoil going on in the background. But big win for Gillingham, another top performance from Jake Turner. And Hinchliffe, this for me is one of the, well, probably the double save of the weekend. You know, I thought that obviously left short from the pass back, but didn't like rush react. He made a point of getting himself in a good position, makes that first save, but the speed at which he got across and the reactions to effectively go back on himself to fingertips over the bar, I thought this was a top, top save. Clean Sheet Club. Yes, we're already at that time in the show. Now, I'm having a bit of a technical difficulty here, so I'll give away a little bit of the magic that happens, which is essentially Matt Beadle texts me his list, his ridiculous list that he does every single week that I then have to read out. So I see it for the first time a few seconds before I read it out, hence why it's often as bad as it is. But it seems like my other phone isn't working for some reason, so I don't have the information. So therefore, Clean Sheet Club will be brought by your very own Matthew Beadle.
Pathetic. That old chestnut, eh? Unbelievable, you. You'll do anything to get out. You know what you and I are going to have, don't you?
Go on.
A scuffle.
An actual scuffle, or just an exchange of words.
Okay, Clean Sheet Club. In the Premier League, Guglielmo Vicario in 27th heaven. Jordan Pickford, slick as a board. Sam Johnston, number three lion. Matt Turner, loving life in his new jersey. David Raya, player. Into the Championship, Senny Dieng, blanks like buses. Mads Hermansson, 4-5. Leo Volstead, off the mark in English football. Cam Dawson, blank gankia. Lee Nichols, tally doubled. Liam Roberts, 2 in a week. Nicholas Bailo Kapic, camper up. Will Norris, first since an August 4-spin. Marco Morosi keeping out the cobblers. Tayashby Hammond, that's what it's all about. And finally in League 2, Harry Lewis, ever present in every competition. Arthur Okonkwo, Wrexham's winner and cleaner. Christy Pym's successive stalemates, Alex Bass, ploughing through. Ben Hinchliffe, 6 wins on the spin. And Dean Boutzanis on the board.
Very good, Matthew. It's almost like you write that yourself.
Would you like the table, Richard?
I would love the table.
So a slight change from last week. We have two new leaders with 6 clean sheets in 12 games apiece, Liam Roberts and Christy Pym. And then just under them, we've got 4-5 in 11, Vaslav Hladký, Ian Melier, Dan Grimshaw and Viljami Sinisalo. It's all good and all to play for. We are going to finish up with a couple of keeper capers and then quickly touch on the EFL trophy and also get your views on the England 1-2-3 ahead of the international fixtures taking place over the course of the next week or so. First up, one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So Olivier Giroud, Richard, a quick shout out to him. Both goalkeepers sent off in the bizarre game between Genoa and AC Milan. But Giroud taking the gloves and earning the plaudits. So he's been given, ridiculously, he was named in the team of the week, the Serie A team of the week. AC Milan have, I don't know how much of this is banter, but they've released Giroud 9 goalkeeper shirts for a limited period on the club's site. And also, a 100% save percentage for Giroud. So there you go. It's that easy.
There you go. Making goalkeeping look easy. No, look, where I give credit, he was very brave. When you see the slow motion replay, you kind of realise that he's really got his head out of the way as best he can. But I love the fact that he's dived in hands first. It did stop a potential goal scoring opportunity and he reacted quickly to get on the second ball. So look, I'll give credit where it's due, but at the same time, there is that slight frustration when someone goes in goal. And as you say, it gets this kind of publicity, you know, whereas... came through.
Oh, there it is. Is that it?
It's come through now.
Right, yeah, okay.
Do you want me to read it?
Brilliant.
Or you're happy with your performance? No? You think you're okay? Anyway, look, going back to Giroud. Yeah, look, credit where it's due. He did. He came on, did well. At the same time, I'm slightly, not frustrated. What's the word I'm looking for? Not vexed. That's a bit too strong. Just agitated by the amount of positive publicity it's got. But no, well done to Olivier Giroud.
The other keeper caper came from the Thurlow Nun League Division 1 South. So this was a game between Clapton Community and Burnham Ramblers. Brilliantly played at the old Spotted Dog Ground. I mean, that's just wonderfully non-league, isn't it? But Clapton Community were two goals down up until the final 6 minutes when the Burnham Ramblers goalkeeper, whose name I've not been able to access, unfortunately, there are a couple of possibilities, but I don't want to name the wrong goalkeeper. But he slipped when taking a goal kick, and with the Clapton Community striker on hand to basically tap it in, he's then picked it up and duly received a red card, his marching orders from the ref. They scored from the resultant indirect free kick and then equalised late on in the game. A red card that apparently, by the letter of the law, had to be given.
Is that right? I did wonder this. That's what I felt. I felt that's incredibly harsh. Like you say, he slipped and you're then left with the situation. Do I let them tap it in or do I pick it up or do I kick it away? You know, you have to do something in that moment. I had no idea that that would be a red card. I wonder, because there's a lot of these kind of weird and wonderful rules. Like the one that I'll always remember is if you put a goal kick into your own net, it's not a goal, it's a corner, you know, and things like that. So I did wonder that if the ball hasn't left the box and the goalkeeper's touched it twice, because isn't that the same as, let's say you went to kick it and you had like a double contact. Does that count as the same sort of thing? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know whether if he had just kicked it out, whether he would have received maybe a yellow card and it still would have been an indirect free kick, I believe. There were a few responses. We put this out on Twitter. There were a few responses that cited DOGSO, or D-O-G-S-O, which is the denying of a goal scoring opportunity. So if this was a defender, for example, and that striker had struck the ball towards the goal and the defender had handled it, he would have received a red card and it would have been a penalty. So in this instance, I guess the goalkeeper has done something similar. There's a bit of a grey area in terms of whether the play is restarted, whether it happens in open play. So I don't fully understand it, but I'm going to link those two together and basically deduce that that's what's happened.
Yeah, well, I did feel for him because we've all had that moment where we've slipped. The fact that his contact was just so bad, it just didn't go. You know, normally when you slip, you're at least able to get it 30, 40 yards, but it was one that he really has slipped and it's just gone a matter of a few yards. And I think pretty much every goalkeeper listening to this podcast would then do exactly what he did. And yeah, unfortunately for him, it was the red card.
Just quickly on the EFL trophy, because there were a number of ties that took place last night. We'll mention Jamie Searle, who was the hero for Forest Green Rovers in their penalty shootout victory over Walsall. He's yet to make a pro league start, Jamie Searle. He did come off the bench, didn't he, for Barnsley, I think last season, maybe for Brad Collins. But yet to make a pro league start, but the hero in the EFL trophy. He saved a penalty in normal time and then two in the shootout to send them top of their table. That was a win over Walsall. And Swindon Town and Reading, Richard, met for the first time, this is unbelievable, in a competitive fixture in more than 21 years last night.
There you go. And just being down the road from each other, you would have thought that would have happened between now and then. But yeah, comfortable win, that one for Reading. But it's always a nice, and there was a lot of goalkeepers yesterday. And this is where you often see, and this is probably me speaking more from an agency perspective, where a lot of the teams that have loaned in goalkeepers from higher up to essentially be a two, ready and waiting if that opportunity comes up. But what they are able to promise them, of course, is the Papa John's game. So you did see a lot of that yesterday. It's quite nice to see some of the goalkeepers that are getting their chance. Joe Wright at Salford being a good example as well. And there's a few others that did get their opportunities yesterday. And it's a really nice platform for them to hopefully get that step into league football at some point.
Before we move on to England, a bit of a quick quiz, because I've mentioned the Swindon-Reading game. I couldn't help but look at that last fixture. It was February 2002, 0-0 draw, I believe. Who were the goalkeepers on that day? I mean, you're never going to get this, but
I'm not going to guess. Just say,
a shot
just
in the
say.
Dark.
No, go on. Just hit me.
Bart Greemink. Remember him? The Dutch goalkeeper.
I know the name, yeah.
And Phil Whitehead.
Ah.
On the bench, just, you know, because we can, Richard McKinney for Swindon and Jamie Ashdown. There you go, Reading. You remember him?
I do remember him indeed. Oh, well, there you go. I might have been able to guess him. That might have. I should have given it a go, really, shouldn't I?
Should have done, really. Yeah, should have done. And finally, as I said, there are international fixtures. Just like to get your opinion, Richard, on the 1-2-3 chosen by Gareth Southgate for this round of fixtures and the previous as well. I believe it's the same three, isn't it? You've got your Jordan Pickford, Aaron Ramsdale and Sam Johnston. So no Nick Pope.
Yeah, look, I think, again, it's obviously style of play. Gareth Southgate has got a certain way of playing. And I say that, and in fairness, you know, Nick Pope, don't think many people have got bad things to say about him in terms of his level of performance. Of course, the one thing, he's not been brought up in that era of playing in the way in which the other three do, arguably. So I get the choice. At the same time, I think if I was Nick Pope, I'd feel a little bit disappointed. I don't think there's much more he can be doing at the moment to warrant an England place. And then it's that interesting situation that we've got now with, of course, David Raya playing. So then does that then impact Aaron Ramsdale's chance? Of course, you would expect Jordan Pickford to start the game. So he's been and continues to be so consistent, certainly in an England shirt, and, you know, certainly doing a good job for Everton this season. So, yeah, look, it will be as expected, I've got no doubt. But it is just that interesting one with Aaron Ramsdale, because then if we get to the next international break and he still hasn't played or hasn't played much between now and then, does that then change the order? Do they bring somebody else in? If, of course, Dean Henderson's injured at the moment, but if Nick Pope continues to do what he's doing, does that then mean that a Ramsdale might drop out and Nick Pope might enter the fray? I kind of expected it to be like this for this squad, but it'll be interesting to see if that's still the same three come the next squad.
Excellent. Okay, Richard, we'll be back next week, won't we? Live in person, hopefully, for the first time in a while.
I'm excited. I'm excited to see you, Matthew.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers
Away.